Hi, I'm Kathleen Gallagher.
Kathleen is Executive Director of the Milwaukee Institute, and I'm Tim Keene.
Tim is founder and director of Golden Angel Investors, and this is How Did You Do That? A show about successful entrepreneurs and how and why they succeeded. Sue Marks understood the idea of entrepreneurship and a strong work ethic from a very young age. Her grandparents immigrated from Germany in 1919 with nothing, but built a life for themselves in Milwaukee. Her grandfather owned a small printing business. Sue's example was a grandfather who left for work before 6 o'clock every morning. Sue got married at 19 and finished college at night and earned a BS in business administration from Marquette University. She has never stopped working.
Sue's founder and CEO of Cielo, a fast-growing recruitment process outsourcing firm that has 1,800 employees and about $200 million of annual revenue. She previously founded ProStaff and HR First, which she sold in 2000 to a Fortune 500 staffing firm. She's also been an investor or on boards of a number of tech and tech-enabled service companies. Sue, welcome to How Did You Do That?
Thanks, Tim and Kathleen. Good to be with you.
Hey, Sue, you started your first companies, ProStaff and HR First, in 1980. Tell us how you came to do that.
Well, I guess I thought I could do it better than the existing providers and had an example in my father and grandfather as an entrepreneur. So I figured I'd give it a try and put a plan together, and the rest is ancient history right now.
After you sold ProStaff and HR First, you decided to do it all over again and form Pinstripe, which you rebranded in 2014 to Cielo. You could have relaxed on a beach. What made you want to do it again?
I ask myself that every once in a while, as as I think probably most entrepreneurs do, if they are totally honest. We were, as HR First, very early in the emergence of what is now called recruitment process outsourcing. And what we do as an RPO company is essentially become the corporate talent acquisition or corporate recruiting department for large companies around the world. So essentially, headquartered in Brookfield, Wisconsin, with our rest of world headquarters in London, we operate the corporate recruiting departments for about 130 companies around the world. We were so early in the space back with ProStaff and HR First that as I thought about going back into the business, technology had changed, HR departments and business needs had gotten so much more sophisticated. There was a lot of runway left in that industry and a lot of room for innovation in the industry. So we've always applied a technology platform to ourselves as a service business, which was quite different than most of our competitors who didn't use technology, just used lots of people.
So Sue, I want you to be honest. I think I remember you telling me once that you had also forgotten how much work it was the first time.
Absolutely. Forgot how much work it was the first time around. Yep. One of my old banking friends and actually supporters and mentors said to me, "Are you sure you want to do this? It's going to take you a little bit to get back in the saddle." And he was absolutely right.
You invented this space called recruitment process outsourcing. I just want to back up a little. What made you think of it, of becoming the HR department for a company?
Well, first, I think there's probably three or four of us that could reasonably say we invented what has now come to be known as recruitment process outsourcing, which is a specialized subset of business process outsourcing. I was in the traditional contingency search and temporary staffing business, and we've got a great example of Manpower's World Headquarters right here. So I was in that business, and I thought, wow, our clients don't really do this very well. And one of the reasons they need so much of us as recruiters, external recruiters and temporary help services, is they don't do it very well. I know how to run staffing like a business. And I heard a presentation by a tech speaker. Tech is the executive committee and executive agenda. And he talked about turning products into services and turning services into products. And he gave the example of Pitney Bowes, who sold in the old days mailing machines and then started outsourcing mailrooms. And that was ding. It made sense to me. And that's how we started.
So you know a lot about what's going on with recruiting today and with young people and all of that sort of thing. So what's changed in the recruiting market from the point of view of the person looking for some new opportunity?
What's changed in the world of recruiting, particularly today when we're at record high employment levels, record low unemployment levels, rising wages, real skill mismatches in terms of where the talent is and where the jobs are, it actually is the customers, the clients, the companies that, as they're recruiting, have to treat candidates like the consumers they are, not like, I can bring 30 people onto the bus, and if they don't work out, I can go get 30 more. Talent is actually really valuable, and every CEO talks the talk, and leadership teams talk the talk about talent. Not that many walk the walk very well. So skilled, highly skilled talent has a lot of options nowadays. And McKinsey wrote The War for Talent, what, Tim and Kathleen, 20 or 30 years ago? There's always been a war for the best talent, and actually right now we're back in a full-fledged war for talent in the United States, and really mostly globally.
One of the things you've always focused on in your businesses is customers and employees. And I know you have these, you're known for what they call SUisms. Many of them are about the importance of customers and employees. Can you talk about how you treat both groups?
Well, I think as businesses grow, it's easy to move away from your customer and not and think more about your internal processes and becoming more efficient. And the minute a CEO and his or her leadership team loses that sense of the customer, the business will inevitably start to fall because somebody else will think about that customer experience. And from the perspective of the employees, happy employees deliver great service to customers. And that's not just a SUism. That is well documented over decades of studies and research that engaged, satisfied employees deliver better service to customers and retain customers. So there's a direct there is a direct correlation between employee engagement and customer NPS scores and profitability.
NPS scores are?
Net Promoter Score, which is a very high standard of customer satisfaction, a Net Promoter Score. Tim, you asked earlier about what's changed in recruiting for candidates, and I said, well, it's changed for companies. It's gotten so much more competitive. What I'd say is all about mobile nowadays, and it's all about being as fast and as frictionless as clients can be, and because if they want to be first to the best talent, they have to provide an experience that is in the remote control of our lives, which is what I call the PDAs that we use or the phones that we use, right? The devices that we use. They are with us 24/7, right? So think about the last time you applied for a job, you maybe used paper and pencil. Then people grew up needing to apply online. Now people are moving to wanting to apply on their mobile device. So most organizations haven't made that transition yet, and they need to because that's where particularly the younger workforce is going. We buy everything on Amazon now, and we can buy it in three clicks on our PDA, right? So that's how we have to be able to engage with candidates and how candidates want to engage with the recruiters and the hiring managers and the corporate representatives.
And if you're the candidate and you've got a good job that you've use this process to find, what's your advice about promotion and mobility versus working your way up? And how should people think about that? Or is there any standard answer to that?
I don't think there's a standard answer to that. There is some research that says a moderate amount of job changing results in a higher level of total lifetime compensation. I would say that you don't want to be 5 years with the same company in the same job. If you're moving vertically and horizontally within your organization and you're learning more and you're being compensated fairly at every move and your compensation is increasing at every move, that, you know, you probably are going to be okay. If you don't think you are, there are ample resources available now on the web and elsewhere for you to check how much you should be making. And rather than go out and look for a new job, I would just go talk to my leader and my HR department, and I'd say I've done my research and here's what I'm worth, and I'd ask for a raise. Then if you don't get one, yeah, and I know the show isn't about giving career advice, but there's so much transparency out there now that as corporate leaders and HR leaders, it's tougher to be in business than it ever has been. Everything is so transparent. Change happens so quickly. Hard to keep up.
So I think there is a big part of you that is a startup founder at heart, but you're now running an organization that has 1,800 employees. How do you maintain the entrepreneurial atmosphere, keep the right level of systems in place, but stay entrepreneurial?
Yeah. Well, we talk a lot about that. We talk about staying small as we get big. We remain in regional P&Ls rather than going to be global organizations. And we've attracted people that, whether they've worked at large companies or small, whether they've had large staffs and have been where we're going, which is some of what we need to do now as we're growing, is hire people that have been where we're going. They have an entrepreneurial bent. And so they really appreciate the opportunity to work with an organization that has scale. It's big enough to have scale and resources and market importance, but small enough that they can still actually make things happen quickly, put their own mark on it, and help us create the future that we're going to move the company into.
So, Sue, lots of our listeners are probably very interested in how you can manage this kind of success with the wonderful family I know you have. So what have you learned about how you do that?
First I'll say that it doesn't happen without a supportive spouse or partner and family, extended family. It doesn't happen without really great leaders throughout our organization and learning to trust and delegate. So it takes a great management team and it takes a really understanding family. I often get asked about work-life balance, and I say that the balance word has never worked for me. I've always used the word blend. And since an early age, I've brought work home and I've brought my kids to work. And I've taken my kids on trips. And then when I had to go on trips alone, it was like, oh, yeah, I've been to New York City with Mom. I'm okay with it. And now Skype and FaceTime makes all of those things so much easier.
So now you've had such success starting to what became very large organizations. What was your biggest challenge in all this, or how did you get through the bad moments?
I think we've been more successful than some companies and less than others. So being a lifelong learner and being confident but humble is actually really important. And our story is still being written. I mean, yes, we're a fairly large company now, but there's many that are much larger in our space. So we have lots of runway to continue to innovate and grow and provide great jobs for people, great career paths for people, and great solutions for our companies, for our customers, who need them more than ever in the kind of competitive environment we are, both for their customers and for the talent that they want to hire. I think the key thing is, as long as I continue to learn and grow and have a leadership team, and that leadership team has leaders beneath them, that we're all learning and growing, and we're authentic and transparent, and we understand that what got us from 0 to 50 and what got us from 50 to 150 or 200 isn't going to get us to 400 or 500, and we make those adjustments and bring those new people onto the team, that we're open to that. That's how we'll continue to overcome the challenges that we'll face. Because with growth comes complexity, and complexity kills the entrepreneurial spirit in businesses. And 1 in 17,000 organizations gets to $500 million. And I'm not sure that's where we're going, but, you know, we'd like to be at least 1 in 10,000, if not 1 in 17,000.
So I know you believe it's the job of an entrepreneur to be optimistic. Mm-hmm. You must have had moments where you thought, I can't do this, or this isn't going to work. How do you deal with that?
You have resources that can help, that have been where you've been, that would understand when you're feeling like did I really blow this? And I need somebody to say, well, yeah, you did, but just dust yourself off and go say you're sorry or go fix it, right? So I think that having a network of advisors and mentors is really important. And having a supportive family, being able to be somewhat transparent with your leadership team, but I guess I'd say that you also need to be strong for your organization, even when you're not feeling strong. Because I've gone through several recessions, right? It's not easy to do that, and you need to be able to steer the ship through those rocks and make sure that the organization and all of your stakeholders have confidence in your leadership and in your leadership team. So I think being confident and humble and authentic enough to admit when you've made a mistake or admit when you need help are the most important things.
So to wrap up, tell us, what's the best thing that's happened to you on your entrepreneurial journey?
Yeah, I like to think it hasn't happened yet. It's been great to see people that I've worked with that are still with Cielo over more than a decade, you know, whether it's, you know, 3 years or a decade, the growth that they've had, or whether they've left our organization and have achieved a level of success. I really like to think that I'm so proud that we had a small part in their development. But I also think that the best hasn't yet happened.
We're lucky to have a role model like you in the community, Sue. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Kathleen and Tim.
Thank you, and be sure to listen to our other podcasts at the iTunes Store or wherever you get your podcasts.
And if you'd like to suggest ideas for future episodes of How Did You Do That, go to wuwm.com.